Hello there, you're listening to Patriarch, the retelling of the biblical story of Abraham by me, Colin Piper. And if this is your first time with us, you've come at the wrong time to the wrong place, I'm afraid. This is the very last episode. If, on the other hand, you've waded your way through countless podcasts to reach this place, first of all, well done. Secondly, I hope you've enjoyed it, which I guess you have if you've made it this far. And thirdly, would you mind telling others about it now that you're wrapping up? I hope you've enjoyed it, as I say, but I'd love more and more people to enjoy it. Do also visit the website BibleNovels.com and find out more about the youth ministries across the globe, which thrillingly this little podcast has helped support in one way or another. Anyway, this is it, everybody. This is the death and the burial of Abraham. Patriarch, chapter 9. And so, this was how it would end. Still Isaac stood and watched the tents. Morning was breaking, and in a few hours' time, all the camp would rise, except this tent. There would be no life from this tent this morning. It was, he realized, finished. There would never be life from this tent again. Abraham was dead. And Isaac had spent the night in the fields waiting on his God and watching over his father's tent. It had been a solitary wake, just as he wanted. Even his beloved Rebecca had been dismissed lovingly but firmly. He neither wanted nor needed anyone this night. 40 years had passed since Isaac had married Rebecca, and he'd found a peace and a fulfillment in her. His father, too, had found a similar peace in his son's love, marriage, and eventual parenthood. And that first morning, when Isaac had proudly introduced Rebecca to him, Abraham's eyes had sparkled with a peculiar recognition. They'd sat in her tent and talked and laughed. For just a moment, the years dropped off his father until his tiredness returned. Then he dismissed himself and got up slowly to leave. But he'd hesitated by the entrance and turned as if to check just one more time that it was who he thought it was sitting there. Then, with a quiet, satisfied nod, he'd passed on. Since then, the years had passed ever more slowly for Abraham. He'd waited on God, no longer for life, but now death. He knew his job was done. He had communed with the Lord and desired him, but seemed to have nothing else to give him. The intimacy he knew with his Lord was surely the greatest man could ever know, but it still wasn't enough for Abraham. He dreamed of a day when it would be more, when it would be complete. And if this couldn't be on earth, he wanted to die. Then he would be with his God. And with his people. Some of these Isaac knew. Others he'd only heard his father speak of. Mamre, Melchizedek, Lot, Eliezer, and of course his dear mother Sarah. All had died too soon for his father, who in turn felt guilty about living on. He was lonely and lost without these friends, and in the loneliness and futility of his old age, he'd sought comfort in a variety of places and with a variety of people. There was Keturah, whom he married, and other women who he didn't. He needed them. A physical and emotional need born somewhere in the past, seemingly dormant for years, but now apparently insatiable. It was evident, though, that for all his need of the women and the obvious fruitfulness that resulted from them, he was neither proud of the unions nor believed them blessed. So over the past weeks, when death finally beckoned, all his family had been summoned. Some had come from afar, been rewarded for their efforts, and then sent on their way again. Others had come from within the camp, only to be sent away from the camp, albeit very well compensated. Only one had been beckoned and asked to stay, and that much to the unease of Isaac. They had come. From the east by the Salt Sea and either side of Mount Nebo had come Moab and Ben-Ammi, Isaac's cousins of sorts, but unlikable and quarrelsome. They showed little interest in the patriarch, who in turn seemed only to tolerate them out of some sense of ancient obligation now finally paid up. They came with small armies, proud and defiant. They told casually of the premature deaths of their mothers, but were rather vague about their fathers. Instead, they told with pride of flourishing tribes east of the Jordan, through whom their family lived on. They told of battles to take the land and vowed that no one, friend or foe, would ever take it from them. From the camp itself, small groups were given an audience with their father. Sons of Abraham's old age, six of Keturah, others of various concubines, each was given an inheritance which was conditional upon their leaving the camp and heading south and east into the desert regions. With few reasons to stay and large incentives to go, they went, mostly towards the border with Egypt. They went, a disparate, even desperate bunch, without any remaining ties or loyalties. Each harboured bitterness, not just towards their father, but also his preferred son, grandsons, and all, and who knew how many generations to come. Isaac knew that none of his people would ever be safe, should they need to pass their way. There was one son, though, older, more powerful, and more belligerent than any other. He too came from the desert to the south and east, but his disdain and hostility was directed not just towards Isaac, but towards all. He had no mother in the camp. She had left long before, not once but twice, the first time in flight and the second in expulsion, and now she was dead. But her grievance lived on in her son. Just the day before, Isaac had come to the boundary of the camp to welcome his half-brother. He'd gone on foot with his two young sons and had been met by Ishmael on horseback with 12 sons. They lined up behind their father as if for battle and looked arrogantly down at the three beneath them. Each ruled 12 tribes, which spread from the sea across the Gulf of Aqaba and beyond into the Arabian desert, all unnerved Isaac, but none more so than Ishmael himself. He was now an old man, but his eyes were still cold and defiant. Nervously, Isaac had greeted his brother and extended the hand of friendship, but without response. It didn't bode well for the journey ahead. The day broke and the camp stirred, but there remained an unnatural stillness over Abraham's household. It was the numbness of disbelief. The previous day, life had left the body of one who, in everyone's memory, had always been there. For the first time, the sun rose without the patriarch to greet it. Isaac went to wake Rebecca, only to find her up, dressed and preparing food for his journey. She, helped by one son and encouraged by the other, prepared food for two, as her husband had requested. He looked at all three of them and loved them. He loved Rebecca more today than that first day he'd taken her in his tent. She was still extraordinarily beautiful and still had a spirit unmatched by any woman he'd ever known. For 40 years of marriage, their love had grown only ever stronger, as indeed had her faith. Jehovah Jireh, the Lord had provided for them. They'd cried out to him, and 16 years before, he'd blessed them not once, but twice over. Esau greeted his father in the confident and secure way only a loved son can. He'd hunted game early that morning and, as ever, had been remarkably successful for a youth of his age. Now his father, who was particularly partial to wild game, would have a treat for the tough journey ahead. He hugged his son with gratitude, pride and love. He also smiled at Jacob, who cooked the game which Esau had killed, but he missed the lad's awkward smile back. He'd been distracted by the meat's aroma and Esau's questions. Esau thought he was coming on the journey with his father, but he wasn't. Oh, Isaac would have loved little more than to take him. He could have stopped to hunt with his son, if not on the way there, at least on the way back. He could also have done with distraction from his other travel companions, both living and dead. It was not a trip he relished at all, but it was one he had to make. He'd promised his father that he would bury him with his mother. He'd also promised his father that he would share the duty with his half-brother Ishmael. It was near enough the last request of the patriarch. It was just one more, which he was rather more pleased to fulfill. All had come and gone. All had pretty much been said and done. And Isaac had been left alone with his father. His father was obviously tired. Tired of his family. And tired of life. There was, however, no fear in his eyes as the light faded. He loved too much to fear and had waited far, far too long for this moment. It was, Isaac reflected, the most glorious way to die. Just once did he register any form of doubt. And once reassured, peace came quickly and rest soon followed. Isaac had heard his father tell him of all he'd given his half-brothers and the conditions upon which the legacies had been made. Each received an inheritance, but the gifts were purely material. Each in turn had to renounce any share or position in Abraham's household. Even Ishmael had to agree to this, although the rejection was tempered by the honour of sharing in the burial rites. It seemed Abraham simply couldn't turn away his firstborn, despite leaving all his remaining wealth and, more significantly, his title to Isaac. Perhaps it was a sign of his heaviness of heart in dismissing Ishmael, which caused doubt to rise again in Abraham. It wasn't, though, a negative doubt. Rather, it was a healthy doubt, the sort which simply can't fathom blessing and so seeks reassurance. Oh, Isaac understood this. When Esau and Jacob were babies, this sort of doubt sent him back again and again to the cribs where they lay, to look once more at their tiny forms. And still, after 40 years of marriage, he would often reach across the bed and take Rebecca's hand just to reassure himself his beloved was real. This was the sort of doubt which caused Abraham to ask to see his grandchildren just one more time. By now, it was evident the time was short, and the young men were hurriedly found and escorted into their grandfather's presence. He could no longer raise his head, and Esau and Jacob needed to be prompted to reach out and each take one of his hands. The patriarch showed on his face no recognition of their presence, and only one knew for sure he'd known they were there. The rest could only guess from the look of serenity which spread across the old man's face that he had found the last reassurance he sought. Esau and Jacob had then been ushered out by their mother to leave their father alone to watch and wait for the end. As they emerged into the light, Rebekah held Jacob to her while Esau sought his own comfort in the hills. Together they stood for a while in silence as Jacob looked down at his hands. Moments before, he had taken his grandfather's left hand and discovered it to be cold and lifeless, but then he'd sensed just the faintest of movements as though Abraham had sought to pass him something, yet now as he looked, he realized he must have imagined it. There was nothing there, except for a couple of grains of sand. It was still relatively early when the two brothers left the camp. This time they left as equals. Both rode side by side and led a third donkey which bore the corpse of Abraham. They left and travelled in silence, neither having anything to say to the other, and Isaac retreated into himself and his memories. Not that all of them were his memories. Some he'd heard so many times he now confused whether he recalled the actual event or merely the telling. Others he'd heard so many times that even though he knew he couldn't have been there, he felt as though he had been. So his mother told him of journeys, always journeys. Journeys into the unknown, into battle, into the desert and out again. And he recalled journeys too. For the best part of the day, he remembered the journey up Moriah, where he'd committed his spirit to his father and witnessed the saving power of God. Then it seemed they were truly immortal. Nothing was too great for their God. And sure enough, other men died. Even dear Eliezer, his guardian, who never had cause to exercise his powers. But his father lived on. Now though, his father was dead too. He'd seen life ebb from him in the same way it would from any other man. For days he'd laid there, unwilling to live but unable just to die. Then one day his breathing became more laboured, rasping, gasping, unbearable. By evening the toil was telling and his breath weakened until it was barely audible. Then it and he was no more. The exact moment of his passing, uncertain. So Abraham was mortal after all. And even now, as they travelled along this road in the heat of the day, his body was subject to rot and decay. This wretched road. As the sun set, he recalled his last journey down this road. Then, too, it had been the road of death he travelled, that time to bury his mother. This time, the road took him back to his mother's grave, but to bury his father. The two brothers set up camp for the night, cooked and then prepared their beds in silence. Again, this suited Isaac. He hadn't slept for 2 days and weariness suddenly overwhelmed him. His dreams were deep and vivid. He dreamed of the camp, waiting for his return, waiting for someone to take the lead, one worthy to wear the mantle of their master, his father. He woke with a start to a blinding light, disorientated and deeply disturbed. And then as his eyes adjusted, he realised he'd overslept and the sun had already risen. Isaac lay in the warmth of its first rays and was comforted. He closed his eyes and relaxed. Then a shadow came over him and with it a chill. He opened his eyes and saw Ishmael. Together, the brothers passed on to Mamre, where they were greeted by the Hittites of Kiriath Arba. The townspeople had come to pay their respects to a prophet prince and patriarch. In solemn procession, they made their way past the great trees of Mamre and up to Machpelah, where they halted and waited for a group of men to remove the stones at the entrance to the cave. Side by side, Isaac and Ishmael stood, watching the way being made for their father's last journey, and when all was ready, together they lowered Abraham's body from the donkey and carried it to the tomb, Isaac at the head and Ishmael at the foot. Once in the darkness, neither looked to the side. One because he cared too much, the other because he cared not at all. They simply lowered their father down as one and retreated out of the cave. Outside, they stood watching the Hittites, each in turn replacing the stones over the cave until once more there were just two stones left to place. Isaac took one, as he had those years before, and Ishmael the other. Side by side, they gingerly bore their loads to the top of the entrance, where the last rays of sun poured down through the two gaps. One fell on Abraham's body, and the other on another. This time, Isaac did see his mother, and he knew he would see her again. How he would return. He and surely Esau would lie here, along with his children and maybe his children's children, but this was not where he would see her. He knew a peace. He finally knew the peace his father had known those years before. Now at last he believed. And in so doing, he knew that he wore his father's mantle. This would be the blessing he would pass on to his children and their children and for all generations. It was the blessing of faith. When Isaac had laid the stone across his father's tomb, he looked across at his brother. He looked with eyes of faith, but without response. Ishmael simply turned and left. From here, Isaac's journey would be a lonely one, but not one travelled alone. The patriarch set out on the road Abraham had walked before him, and countless generations would walk after him, all bound for eternity by faith.